a white SUV on a road.
This hour, we are tracking breaking news. Just a moment ago, Moscow police confirmed four people were found dead in a home just steps away from the University of Idaho campus.
If this was a true crime podcast, here is where I'd start. I tell you that this is a story which all began in a college town of Moscow, Idaho, USA.
This right here is where officers found four bodies yesterday, and they were all University of Idaho students.
A crime that within days became the biggest story on the internet, with 2 billion hits on TikTok.
This is big news, guys. This is big. I'm gassed. I'm literally panicked.
Reaching the farthest corners of the globe.
I live in Australia, and somehow this case made its way onto my For You page.
Ils ont découvert une scène de...
Content creators speaking in a wide range of languages.
Millions of people logged on and tried to solve the crime. And I was hooked.
We are talking about the armchair detectives. Their voices are louder than ever.
My theory is that this was a jealousy killing.
Was he watching them on social media? Was he the stalker?
But how much of what I saw online was really true?
This is just my theory about what has happened.
That is my speculation.
I want to know y'all's theories down below.
This case is important, and maybe together we can solve it.
Zara McDermott puts on a pair of sunglasses. The Idaho Murders, trial by TikTok. Moscow, Idaho, 8 months after the murders. Zara gets out of her white SUV and heads along a sun-drenched pavement. A banner across a tree-lined road reads, "Welcome, Vandals."
I can see University of Idaho signs everywhere. There's another vandal sign. U of I sign.
Moscow is a small town in northern Idaho of 25,000 people. Half of them are students from the local university.
It feels really strange to actually be here and walking down the main street of Moscow. It's so small and quaint, and it's got a lot of character. It's like really different to what I thought it would be. I've seen people do video walkthroughs of this town on TikTok, but actually being here is really, it's really strange.
It's 8 months since I first heard about the brutal murders of four college students, Ethan Chapin, Zanika Nodal, Kaylee Gonzalez, and Madison Mogan. I followed every detail of their story online.
Zara unzips her suitcase in a hotel room.
I bought so many T-shirts. No one needs this many T-shirts. Why? Why have I done this? When you see that there's been a tragedy or there's a crime and you see it on your social media, you want to work it out, you want to understand it. Like, I feel like we all have this weird thing ingrained in us where we want to know what happened and why, and we want to know right now. I definitely think that the more you watch, the more obsessed you are, the more you think you might be able to solve a true crime.
This is a case of four University of Idaho students and how they were murdered in the middle of...
I would be laying awake at night in bed on TikTok trying to get all the information I could. I remember I'd watched this piece of CCTV footage so many times that my boyfriend was next to me in bed and he was like, "Why have you watched that like 20 times? Zara, you need to put the phone down. Like, it's like 1 a.m. But I was so obsessed with it.
A TikTok commentator.
Yo, this is so crazy what is happening right now.
What started as a carefree night for these four college friends.
Ethan and Zana were seen at the Sigma Chi house on the Idaho campus that night.
On that same night, Kaylee and Madison were at a local bar from 10 p.m. to 1:30 a.m.
They were inside this club here.
Drinking, partying, having fun, letting loose before the holiday break.
And then they walked back home.
They got food and they went back to their house.
By 1:45, authorities say all of the students were back in their home.
And then something happened to them.
A property with porch lights illuminating the ground floor frontage.
There was something about this crime that put a global spotlight on the small town of Moscow.
A large white water tower with capital letter I's on it looms over the small town. Day one of the investigation, 1 p.m. An area has been taped off and a uniformed police officer walks around the back of his squad car. A young white man with dark hair and glasses is reading out a series of text messages.
Sunday, November 13th, 1.04 p.m. Moscow PD investigating a homicide on King Road near campus. Suspect is not known at this time. Stay away from the area and shelter in place. Obviously, the first initial response is that is right next to me.
This is Tony. Tony was a neighbor of the four students and woke up to a crime scene on his doorstep.
A breaking news report.
The crime scene here at the home of the four University of Idaho students has been very active all day long.
The whereabouts of the killer and the knife used are still unknown.
So there would have been police cars in this entire line, security vehicles, crime scene tape everywhere. So it was overwhelming.
What was it like waking up on that first morning after the tragedy?
It was really bad. Coming up that staircase, there would be a gazebo right here, like a tripod right here. People standing, lights right down on here. It was very grim. It was no longer a metaphorical spectacle. It quickly turned into something literal, right? You ascend into this just like a circus.
It must have been really, really hard to kind of get to grips with what actually happened. And
so I didn't really get to fully process it living here. But now that I spent some time alone and I can look back on it, it was really heavy. This is a spot that was otherwise innocent became sad. There's this sickening feeling of, oh my God, they're gone. All of the neighbors, residents, roommates are standing outside. They're just standing. That's it. Some people standing outside just to get a sense of safety. But I know some of them were standing outside wondering where their friends were.
The student house now. All the doors and windows have been boarded up with plywood. In the past, hours tick past from 1 p.m. through to 5 p.m. More messages on the university alert system read, Moscow police continues to investigate the death of four people near campus. They indicate there is no ongoing threat.
Almost immediately, local speculation as to what happened made its way online. And it wasn't long before the true crime community got involved, and I was hooked.
Hello, and welcome to True Crime Rocket Science.
Evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Crime Circus.
This is 10 to Life.
We're going to be talking about this odd, tragic story.
Everybody's talking about it. It's on every darn news source right now.
The hashtag Idaho4 quickly racks up millions of views.
Jonathan Lee Riches investigates four college students, Moscow, Idaho. They were brutally stabbed to death inside their home in the middle of the night.
When Jonathan Lee Riches started covering this tragedy, he had only a few thousand followers on his YouTube channel. He now has over 100,000.
I'm out here covering this case. Subscribe to my channel, like, hit the notification button.
He travels nearly 3,000 miles from Florida to deep dive into every little bit of information that surfaces on this case. He's agreed for me to follow him as he creates content for his channel, JLR Investigates.
Zara has parked up alongside Jonathan.
Are you getting changed?
Yeah, different outfit.
How comes?
I like to keep it interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the same outfits. I feel like each one warrants a different shirt.
How many other shirts and outfits do you have with you?
You can see if you want.
Show me. Please show me.
Got it. Bam. Press. JLR Investigates.
Oh, wow.
Media.
Lots of brand
names. Lots of brand names. And then got multiple shirts. I've been wearing a lot of these for the last day. Like, if I'm doing a report out in the swamp, Florida swamp or the woods, I'll throw on a pair of, like, you know, like
some
outdoors.
Camo. Yeah.
Yeah, to kind of fit the theme of where I'm at.
Yep.
Jeans, if I have to do a you know, a interview, a former interview with someone, or, you know, something not necessarily with shorts, you know, go into a restaurant and sit down and talk to somebody about yeah. a topic. So I'll just throw on a pair of jeans.
Do you always have a bag ready to go?
Oh, I'm on standby. Anything breaks that's in importance, got a bag, a toothpaste, toothbrush.
You're on the road a lot.
I'm hunting for the stories, hunting to, you know, share awareness to tragedies that are occurring, yeah.
So where's next, then?
Next is right here. I call myself an online truth-seeking sleuth. I love it. I love your First Amendment right to be a journalist. Anyone can be a citizen journalist. Anyone can get a camera, your own phone, and report, and you are considered a journalist. And I hope that is never taken away in this country.
On a street corner,
Jonathan Lee Rich's investigates. I am standing at the corner of Farm Road and Pullman Road in Moscow, Idaho. Why am I here?
JLR makes up to 8 videos a day on this tragedy, constantly looking for something to satisfy his audience's craving for more.
Oh my gosh, this lady, hey, look.
How are you? God bless you. You have a good day, ma'am. You watch YouTube?
I watch all the time.
Oh, you watch me?
Yeah.
God bless you guys. Thank you. Thank you for the support. Do you live here?
Yeah.
We're going to try to get to the bottom of this because we're going to get out the truth to share what happened.
Good luck.
Thank you, ma'am.
She just stopped. She went, GLR, I love you. Does it feel good when people...
Yes, that just motivated.
Yeah.
That just inspired me to push harder.
I feel a new spark.
Yeah, I'm grateful, kind of... I'm flattered.
Yeah.
And it's a cool feeling. It's a cool feeling.
I think the main thing I want to get an understanding of is this hunger to get all the information possible. You know, what's incentivizing him to want to get right in the details of so many things and not trust the investigation to do its job?
The town and a distant mountain range cast into silhouette. Day 2 of the investigation. Another breaking news report.
This right here is where officers found 4 bodies yesterday. We now know the names of those 4 students. 20-year-old Ethan Chapin from Conway, Washington. 21-year-old Madison Mogan from Coeur d'Alene. 21-year-old Kaylee Goncalves from Rathdrum, Idaho. And 20-year-old Dana Kernodle from Avondale, Arizona. And they were all University of Idaho students.
We've watched this memorial grow all day long, students dropping off flowers and stuffed animals, remembering the 4 young lives that were lost. And there's still a lot of unanswered questions tonight, like how this happened and why.
As vigils appear across Moscow, people on social media all over the world post tributes to the victims online.
A video of Kaylee, a blonde-haired white woman, dancing with a dog.
The last video that Kaylee uploaded has 8.7 million views, the next one 7.5 million, 165,000 followers now on TikTok.
Do you think anyone would drink wine?
I would. I'll have some wine. I didn't even think of it, really, because, you know, I'm not a big drinker.
I watched these videos very soon after the murders happened. There is something nice about being able to look at their social medias and realise that they're just... another human being. Social media gives you a walkthrough of someone's entire life. You can really connect with a victim as if they're your friend. I think that social media is the entire reason why there was and still is a huge obsession around the victims.
As the U of I community grieves, we still don't know how those 4 students died. Moscow police have not told us much about what happened.
Let's go to John Webb, who's been there since this story broke. John.
Yeah, good evening, Sean. Still no word on the cause of the death of the students. The scene tonight is much quieter. One police officer is watching over the house tonight. You can see his...
In the early days of the investigation, people looked to the mainstream media for information about the case.
So this is where our newsroom radio station are. Here's some of the publications that they put out. You can see here's one that they did on the vigil that was held.
Wow.
Beautiful photo that Daniel did.
This is John Webb.
Editor-in-chief.
John covered the case for a local TV station. He was also a student and knew two of the victims.
You were friends with Ethan and Zana. Can you share anything about what they were like as people?
Zana was very goofy. She was funny, always making jokes at parties and stuff. And Ethan was kind of the Labrador, you know. Everybody just loved him, and he was a sweetheart.
What was that moment like when you realized that some of the victims were people you knew?
Yeah. Denial. You don't believe it when you first hear it. For a while, I couldn't even say the names on the air. It was tough. I remember being scared. I didn't have anybody yet, and I knew as the clock ticked by every day, we were further and further away from catching whoever was responsible for this, and all the pain that it caused a lot of people here. And I remember my station was like, "We'll put you up in a hotel and stuff." I'm like, "No, I gotta stay with my friend." And we were scared, and I think we still are. And we look back now, and we're like, "Why did we never lock our doors? Why did we never lock our windows? This could happen to anybody, you know."
Even through the hard moments of the case, what drove you to carry on?
For a while, we were worried that this was going to go cold. You know, that was in the back of our minds constantly.
The ground is covered in snow as a police SUV drives away from the property.
Still no arrest and no suspect.
This community is small. They're on edge. There is a maniacal quadruple murderer out there.
There are University of Idaho students, their families, and the greater Moscow community, many of which are still concerned for their safety.
I was driving down to the police department physically every day to try and see if anybody would talk. Anybody. There was no communication at all for the first 3 days. Then the vacuum, the rumor mill starts happening, right? That is when the online sleuth started to begin.
Who did it? Who is responsible? What happened?
I marked up the map so you could see all the possible routes that the intruder may have taken when he left the residence.
It appears to be blood on what looks like a cabinet.
We're gonna do a little walk through the house here. Preface this, but this is not my footage. I got it off the internet.
The town, with flat-roofed buildings in white stone and red brick, interspersed by clumps of mature trees and greenery. Pale yellow and brown fields blanket the lower slopes of the distant mountains. Day 3 of the investigation.
After 3 days of silence, Moscow Police Department announced a press conference.
We are going to be covering the Moscow Police Department's press conference.
Moscow police are holding a press conference in half an hour. We will post another video if we have any new information for you guys.
The small force that hasn't investigated a homicide in 7 years is suddenly thrust onto the world stage.
I'll be reading from my notes today because I want the information you received to be extremely accurate. The facts of the case that we know right now. We know that these homicides occurred in the early morning hours of Sunday, November 13th. The four were stabbed with a knife, but no weapon has been located at this time. There was no sign of forced entry into the residence. We do not have a suspect at this time, and that individual is still out there.
Chief Wright, John Webb with KHQ. Why has there been such limited information over the past couple days? I mean, we're almost 4 days into this. Why has it been so limited?
Yeah, it's a difficult, but the reality is, I probably should have been standing here a day or so ago.
I'm Emma Epperly with the Spokesman Review. Hi. So there were other roommates who lived at that residence. Were the roommates home at the time of the attack?
There was other people home.
So since they were home, was it a hostage situation?
No, it was not.
Hi, Heather Roberts with ABC News. The other two roommates were there at the time of the attack. Is there any explanation as to why you have surviving witnesses to an incident at 3 or 4 in the morning and the 911 call didn't come until noon?
I don't think I ever said that they were witnesses.
Were they the 911 caller?
At this point in time, I'm not going to divulge who our 911 caller is.
Quick update here on this Idaho stabbing. This is getting really suspicious.
How could there possibly be two other roommates in the home during all of this?
How could they not know there was a
brutal attack going on in the house.
If there's four stabbings, there is blood everywhere.
Why did it take 8 hours later to call 911?
Let me tell you why she didn't call 911, because they both full of shit.
I think it was an inside job, and I think the two surviving roommates had something to do with it.
Photos and private details about the roommates Dylan and Bethany rapidly circulate online.
I don't care what nobody else say, I don't trust these two. Now, obviously, I don't have any concrete facts.
These two girls, I'm not going to say should be in the hot seat. I would be combing their socials.
These are public pictures that she posted on her own social media profile that is public still. I'm going to share. Check it out.
They were texting one another during the murder.
Who texts during a murder?
The two surviving roommates, Dylan and Bethany, are forced into hiding.
Tampa, Florida. Single-story properties painted pale blue nestle close to the edge of a body of water. A small Chihuahua-style dog with a lead and harness yaps as flower-shaped windmills turn in the breeze.
Content creators, YouTube, web sleuths, we do specialize in pressure campaigns.
This is Bullhorn Betty.
Applying pressure, applying social media pressure, going after them, putting them on thumbnails, talking about their case, pointing the finger at them. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the coffee club. It's Bullhorn Betty. We're going to be...
Bullhorn Betty has a YouTube channel and has made hundreds of hours of content on the Idaho murders.
We heard that they came home around 1 a.m. before the other four came home. Do you think they went straight to bed? I call people out on my channel. I know other people call people out on their channel. But should they not be? I think they should be. And I will get attention to the case, and I know I can. And I've proven that over and over again. And really, sometimes these cases just need a lot of eyes on them.
So everybody stop scrolling and pay attention to this poster. There's a missing person named Gabby Petito.
Web sleuthing gained traction 2 years ago when the online community helped locate the body of a 22-year-old travel blogger, Gabby Petito.
When she vanished, people took the case into their own hands and became digital detectives scouring social media for clues.
Had it not been for web sleuths and social media creators, Gabby Petito, in all fairness, would probably still be out there lost. That's really when the world kind of realized that web sleuths can be beneficial and can help. If a new case is breaking, I got myself a checklist of immediate things that I must do. First thing is identifying the victim, identifying the suspect. We'd be doing background checks on them, going through every single one of their social media. Who is commenting in their Twitter handles, their Instagram messages, their Facebook messages? I don't think law enforcement is prepared for the type of change that's coming with social media, but change is coming.
Bullhorn Betty is a middle-aged white woman with white blonde hair. John Webb, a young white man with dark, slightly quiffed hair, is working on a computer at KHQ.
It was reporter John Webb who unwittingly gave the sleuths their first clue by releasing video of the victims on the night of the murder.
It was a couple days after the murder we had found video of Kaylee and Madison actually at a popular food truck in downtown Moscow. A lot of people went there after the bars and stuff to get a bite to eat before heading home. So we posted this video of Grub Truck and their last few hours of being alive. I did not realize how far and how fast that video would spread online. Next morning, I woke up, it was everywhere.
Kaylee and Madison noticed.
Food truck Twitch stream shows two of the victims buying tacos around 1:53 a.m., just hours before the slayings.
This food truck video could be so important to figuring out what could have happened to them.
A yellow food truck with the word Grub printed in white on the side.
The Grub Truck is a late-night food vendor, popular with students. It live-streams every service across multiple cameras. A student in the back of the video is a new focus for the true crime community. He becomes known as Hoodie Guy, or Grub Truck Guy.
A bearded white man.
This is Joe. Joe runs the grub truck and was working on the night of the murders.
And I can't imagine that feeling of being one of the last people to, like, interact with the victims.
It was honestly just really depressing to see some young kids having a really good time knowing that they were dead.
So after this, did a lot of people start trying to film and record outside the grub truck?
Yes, yeah, a lot of people. People walking around with their phones. There's one guy that was unbelievably annoying, and I would say just was, like, just a full asshole about it.
Was he recording on his phone?
Yeah.
And doing this?
Yep.
I know who that is.
Here it is. The grub truck. Cold out here, nobody's out here in downtown Moscow. This is the same grub truck that Maddie and Kaylee was in, right? They came here, Maddie and Kaylee?
Oh, we don't discuss that.
Oh, you guys can or you just don't want to? So let me ask a question.
I'm a journalist, so I'm covering this case. There's people saying, oh, the grub truck guy did it. He did it. He's involved because he... What do you say to that?
I don't respond.
Joe's response to Jonathan Lee Rich's question is subtitled, I don't respond to people. I'm not talking about it.
Just a food truck. Okay.
Just a food truck. All right, so this is what they sell.
He didn't ask, like, any intelligent questions or, like, anything could have been useful. None of that speaks to me as a person trying to help solve a murder.
Is the grub truck people involved? I would say not. But there is people online that says, talk to Joey. Joey, the grub truck guy, whoever Joey is, he knows something or he's done something. So, you know, I flat out asked.
I think a lot of people on the internet sleuth side of it were just trying to get content dramatizing tragedy.
The pursuit of Hoodie Guy is relentless, and his private information, including his parents' address, is spread online. His sister takes to social media to put out a passionate plea.
Are you going to take this video down? It has nothing to do with my family. This video has pictures of our houses. It shows where we work and it has our faces plastered. We have received threats and harassment. And we didn't deserve that. And I hope in the future we can take away from this that this is not a game of Clue.
Zara is making her way along Linda Lane when she spots Jonathan filming himself on his phone.
I see him. I think he's making a video.
I've seen so many online sleuths like JLR prodding and provoking for information.
Oh, I don't want to get in the way of his video.
The murders happened at the Moscow, Idaho home, 1122 King Road home, and that's...
Does JLR really think his tactics are going to help solve the crime?
The goal is here is to let criminals and bad actors be put on notice that you can't get away with it nowadays, because you're going to have YouTubers and social media on you. I throw names around that could be possibly involved or asked. Boyfriends of the victims, fraternity members, sorority girls, neighbors, community members, registered sex offenders, because maybe you can gaslight these people to come out and share where they were really at so we can cross them off the list.
Sometimes, though, this is, you know, these are people that law enforcement have ruled out. So why is the focus still on them?
Well, law enforcement might say they ruled somebody out, but they don't give any details. If you're accused of something, you need to come out and just inform the public, hey, I'm not involved. This is where I was to prove it. We're not going to stop until we find out. If they don't want to give us the information, we'll find out ourselves.
Do you think that people staying silent makes them seem suspicious?
I do. Especially if they stay silent and start locking down their social media accounts. And I think it's important for them to come out and talk. When they don't, it gets very, very bad in cyberspace with everyone digging in their background, their family's background, their friends.
Can you see it from a side of they may just want privacy at this time?
They could, but maybe a family member of them or a spokesperson for them could come forward and say that might alleviate that suspicion more.
Jonathan is a slim-faced white man in his 40s and is wearing a black baseball cap with the word press printed on it in white. Day 7 of the investigation.
With the first week gone and no suspects on the horizon, the grieving sister of one of the murdered students takes to national news to release information.
Olivia Gonzalez isn't waiting for police, raising questions about why her sister called a young man named Jack multiple times the night she was slain.
Kaylee calls Jack six times between 2:26 a.m. to 2:44 a.m.
Kaylee called him seven times from her phone. Maddie called him three times from her phone. So a total of 10 calls to Jack.
So who is this Jack guy and why were they calling him so much?
Kaylee Gonzalez has photos with a young man named Jack posted to her Instagram.
Jack is Kaylee's ex-boyfriend. They were together for 6 years.
We did do some preliminary work on him. So we do have access to his Twitter account and some of the postings that he's made there.
Moscow Police Department are forced to start combating the rumors and online speculation in their press conference.
We do not believe the following individuals are involved in this crime. The two surviving roommates. A male seen at the grub truck food vendor downtown, specifically wearing a white hoodie. We're also aware of a male whom Madison and Kaylee had called several times the morning of November 13th. And we do not suspect that individual.
Thank you, Captain. We know that people want answers, and a lot of people have expressed their desire to help. And the best thing that most of people can do to help is to stop with any kind of rumors and just seek official information that comes out of the Moscow Police Department.
Kaylee's ex-boyfriend was immediately cleared by the police, along with Hoodie Guy and Dylan and Bethany, the roommates. They all refused to speak to the media or engage with the sleuths.
The video is converted. I will go right here to upload. Wording and your thumbnail is very, very important.
JLR has made another video for his channel about the CCTV cameras near the student's house.
And I'll just do a hashtag.
How do the hashtags help?
I think it helps. I think people do search hashtags. In this case, I put them Dylan Mortensen, Bethany Funk, Idaho 4, Moscow, Idaho. Keywords all centered around this tragedy. Because
why Dylan Mortensen? Because she's not in this video.
But they're just part of the case and people want to know about them. And I just feel like, you know, it draws people to my channel also.
Do you still think they may have something to do with the case?
I don't think that. And that's not what I lean towards. But I do talk about them. I talk about all the roles. And I also talk about what other people are talking about them to engage.
But those two roommates have shut their social medias down. Mm-hmm. Do you think that might not be a bit of a sign that they don't want themselves to be public?
I don't know the reasons why of shutting down. Maybe law enforcement told them to shut it down. Maybe law enforcement said, protect yourself from weirdos out there and all kinds of people that might stalk you or something like mm-hmm. that and be obsessed with you. You know, we don't know if Dylan Mortensen and Bethany Funk like all this attention or not. We don't know. So maybe they do. Maybe they
do. You think they might like it?
I don't know. Like, they were sharing all types of stuff on them, their activities on social media, so they chose to be public figures. They put their own stuff out there, and once it goes on the internet, it stays on the internet forever.
Mm-hmm.
This is the new way of life. The internet is our life. This is the new norm. It literally is the new norm. I don't see any way we're getting past this. I don't know if any laws can prevent people from talking about somebody that already put their stuff out there. I just see it as the future.
And are you happy contributing to it?
I'm happy with trying to get the truth and understanding of what happened.
Zara nods along with JLR. An island dotted with tall palm trees and a different species of tree at the edge of some water, with its trunk at such an angle that it's almost touching the ground. San Diego, California, a single-story property.
This is my daughter, Nicole. It's my baby. Best part of my life, obviously, being a mom. I don't want to cry, but... So... She died in 2011. Her death was ruled as a suicide, and I believe it was a murder. Sometimes when I see girls, little blonde girls that remind me of my daughter, then I just feel like, oh, no, no, no. I don't want to let somebody get away with that. I hate people who commit murder. I hate them. They've ruined my life. And so I want them to go to jail.
This is Donna Serafina,
Reverend Donna Serafina, Spirit Communications Psychic.
Thank you for joining me today. My name is Reverend Donna Serafina. I am a spiritualist reverend and a psychic medium.
The desperation for any new clue to the murders leads the online community to listen to a different kind of sleuth.
The physical description of the Moscow killer was revealed to me and downloaded information from the universal consciousness.
I am a true crime medium and I did psychic investigation.
I was reading the murder weapon. Sometimes the cards show meanings and the images.
Donna alleged the killer was the son of a baker. All the bakeries in downtown Moscow were targeted.
Okay, let me see what they're going to show me. I keep getting this French bread, baguette. I kind of have a feeling it's more like a family business.
That this is Smitty. Smitty runs the bagel shop in downtown Moscow.
So this is where the son theory comes in.
For some reason, they know that their son has some thought patterns that are of violent nature like that. Like, he's sticky with the blood, but for him it feels good. Like, he would like to jack off with his bloody hands.
You can't make this up.
I think I listened to this exact bit and I thought, not for me.
Right.
Can I see some of the harassment that you face in the comments?
Yep, I have some insights on my computer here. Facebook and Instagram. Yeah, here's one. Your son is the killer. Go to the FBI immediately. Then it says he got that cut during the killings, not at work. And then it mentions my name and says it's my son.
Yeah. You don't have a son?
Nope. Don't have a son. so once everything started getting crazy, I took a couple snapshots of my Facebook analytics. This was pre-psychic reading that caused all this. And the 30-day snapshot shows 243 Facebook page visits. Not very impressive, but I'm not a huge social media person. But this next screenshot is post-murders, more specifically...
Oh, my gosh.
Post-psychic, 231,000 plus Facebook page visits, and then the Instagram is almost 20,000.
That's not even a true reflection of how many people saw the, you know, the rumor on TikTok or YouTube. This fraction of people are the people that actually have decided to conduct almost their own investigation.
Right.
Smitty, a bold white man, shakes his head.
Even though part of me knew, like, this is crazy that this even exists, this content, I still watched it. I still consumed it and I still felt engaged with it. You know, for me, it became a vicious cycle of a constant need for new information, regardless of whether it was necessarily substantiated or true. Normally, someone like this wouldn't have an influence and wouldn't have a platform to be able to make outlandish statements. And I think that's the danger, but also that's why, you know, so many of these online sleuths operate on TikTok, because they know their content, if it gets enough likes and it gets enough views and it gets caught up in the algorithm, it has the potential to go viral more than on any other social media platform.
Zara has been sitting cross-legged on her bed to watch videos on her laptop. Week 2. Cars crossing the main street of Moscow, Idaho.
The misinformation becomes so loud that the police add a rumor control section to their website.
Quelling rumors about specific individuals or specific events that may or may not have happened is a huge distraction for investigators.
Straight ahead tonight at 6, shutting down the rumor mill, our John Webb set down...
At his local news station, John Webb starts to fact-check theories appearing on social media.
Kids were bound and gagged.
That is incorrect.
Roommates saw someone with a mask.
I don't have that knowledge.
To fact-check people online during a murder investigation. Unheard of. We've never seen anything like that before.
A TikTok content creator.
Major update in the U of I killings. If you're following this case, you're gonna want to stick around for this video.
This is Destiny. Destiny is a TikToker with 11,000 followers. She built her following off filming her own reactions to the unfolding events.
They were beautiful people inside and out. And they didn't deserve this. And, yeah, so I just want to take a moment and just grieve for them.
She started attending police press conferences to live stream them for her audience.
So we would like to open it up to any questions.
Someone hands a microphone to a middle-aged white woman.
Destiny Martin with the LCSC Pathfinder. Can you lend any insights into the possibility that the murder weapon is linked to the ROTC program? And also, have you guys ruled out the possibility that the killer might be a female?
So we look at every avenue. We're looking at every group of people, like I said.
Immediately after the press conference, the newspaper Destiny claims to be affiliated with releases a statement saying they've never heard of Destiny Martin. This leads to another frenzy of intense sleuthing activity.
Hey, Tic Tac, need your help again. We need to identify this woman right here. They just did a press conference, and this woman showed up to the press conference saying that she worked for the newspaper. She doesn't. She doesn't work for any publication at all.
How weird is that? How did she even get in there? Why did she lie about what press outlet she was with?
Should she be on the suspect list? Because that's really kind of creepy.
A sign reads, "Welcome to Washington," at Destiny's home.
Hi, Destiny. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Nice to meet you.
I got a lot of backlash. A lot of people were very upset. People then started to attack my character and my presence at those press conferences. Honestly, looking back, it was probably more because I was hearing everyone else say their name and then their newspaper or news. So I just said it that way. And it didn't occur to me that it would be taken wrong. I received multiple death threats, and when I would go live, I would have people say that they were outside my door. They were saying, "I'm going to kill you."
That must have been really scary.
It was extremely scary.
Did this stop you from posting any more videos?
No, I was certainly more careful about how I was posting things and doing my lives, but the fact that I have a martial arts background I wouldn't be an easy target.
Zara drives away from the property, which is surrounded by wire mesh fencing, along a single gravel track. Moscow, Idaho, on an overcast day, then the same area blanketed by snow. Week 3. The student property.
The weeks pass with no apparent suspects or leads.
It's now been 3 weeks since authorities have held a press conference allowing us to ask questions. Families continue to be frustrated by the lack of information. And as Crime 2's Kyle Simchuk reports tonight, one of them has now hired an attorney.
We have so little information from law enforcement.
The Gonzalez really family is, you know, start publicly criticizing the investigation.
I just feel like there's been a couple individuals that were cleared very fast.
Many are worried that the killer may never be found.
The town on a clear day, then lightly dusted with snow. As time passes, the numbers after the word week change from 4 to 5 to 6 to 7.
Breaking news, big news, press conference today, 1 p.m. Moscow police are holding a press conference for the first time since before Thanksgiving. This is big. I'm gassed up. I'm literally panicked. I just woke up. I had to tell you guys, 1 p.m.
A police officer in uniform comes to stand at a lectern in a wood-paneled room.
Thank you for coming today. In conjunction with the Pennsylvania State Police, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, detectives arrested 28-year-old Brian Christopher Kohlberger in Albrightsville, Pennsylvania.
Bullhorn Betty.
Right now, we've got some activity going on. They're starting to move the cars out in front of this house.
We were all set up at 1122 King Road, and then all of a sudden, you literally heard ding, 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 zzzz, all over the place. And next thing we know, we start hearing about Brian Koberger, and we're like, Brian who?
I see we have confirmed that Brian Koberger is a PhD student covering criminal justice at Washington State University.
Koberger is escorted out of court in red prison-issue scrubs and with his hands cuffed.
Well, I don't think that he was on anybody's radar. Apparently, he studied criminology in graduate school.
Here's the guy. This is the guy they're saying committed this heinous crime. Creepy, creepy dude. Creepy, creepy dude.
DNA test taken from suspect Brian Koberger's cheek swab matched DNA left on that infamous knife sheath that Koberger allegedly left behind.
Not a single sleuth had accused Brian Koberger in the previous 6 weeks. It was forensics that ultimately led the police to him.
The suspect, Brian Koberger, is expected to enter a plea for 4 counts of first-degree murder.
Clouds are reflected in the still waters of a river. The student's home boarded up and fenced off.
Oh my God, the anxiety. Okay, so an arrest has finally been made in the Idaho 4 case.
And hopefully all of the victims can have a little bit of justice now.
Now that it's less of a crime story, a lot of people are ready to just kind of be able to grieve in private.
Immediately you feel calm because...
John Webb shakes his head. The student's neighbor, Tony.
It was a sense of relief. Okay. Not only are we going to get closer to closure and an answer, but hopefully some peace. Maybe this means we don't have to be so afraid.
No, it did not end there. No, it didn't stop. It got worse.
Check this out. Brian Koberger, everyone wants to know a motive. How is he connected to the victims?
Someone from Pennsylvania, 2,500 miles away, was arrested for this crime. Immediately, that just sent me into extra overdrive.
I have the Steptoe Village Apartments where Brian Koberger lived. And you can
the
see
sleuths immediately
here,
started to explore additional avenues of investigation to update their audiences.
You're telling me one person went in, unalived, with a knife, four humans, got back out in 8 minutes.
The first thing he asked law enforcement was anybody else arrested in this case.
The sleuth's investigation leads them to another incident that occurred 4 weeks after the murders. It's completely unrelated. An army veteran with PTSD called Brent Kapaka had been shot dead in a standoff with police. The sleuths tried to connect the dots.
Brent Kapaka and Brian Koberger, both with the exact same initials.
Do you think Brent is somehow involved?
The two men had never even met.
Was he a puppet and Brian Koberger was the puppet master?
A content creator wearing white face makeup and spiders drawn on his cheeks. Jonathan Lee Riches gets out of his car in front of an Army Career Center and immediately starts filming himself.
Jonathan Lee Riches investigates. I am standing out front of the Army Recruiting Center. Why am I here? There is still a lot of speculation out there whether Brent Kapaka is involved with the Moscow, Idaho case.
People want to know, did Brent Kapaka do these Moscow, Idaho stabbings?
Now, people want to know, did he do this or not? Was he involved in any way? Did he work with anyone? I spoke to Brent Kopaka's best friend.
And I want to share with everyone our correspondence with one another, and then we will further discuss. Check it out.
Later, JLR is in a room at the Cactus Motel.
Okay, so this is the conversation I had with Darren Duncan, who is the best friend of Brent Kapaka. You can see him putting their arms around each other. Hey, dude, I'm covering the Moscow, Idaho case. I got a big platform here. Help me put these Brent Kapaka rumors to rest.
Darren responds to me. So you're the guy who keeps making videos about my friend and took my picture of us, replaced me with Kohlberger. He said, people think he's involved because of idiots like you. Go F yourself. You're helping fuel the fire of the conspiracy theory. I'm trying to think of the angle that I will probably put this video out. I think I'm going to put exclusive interview with the best friend of Brent Kopacka.
A photograph of Brent.
I met Brent Kopacka when we were about 13 years old in junior high. It was about 22 years ago. About a couple weeks after he died, I Googled Brent's name, and that's when I started seeing things online that people were implicating him in that quadruple homicide that happened last November in Idaho.
This is Darren Duncan. Days after Kohlberger was arrested, a rumor circulated that Darren's best friend Brent was his accomplice.
So this is a video by JLR Investigates, and it says exclusive interview, Brent Kopacka, best friend.
He's trying to say that it was an exclusive interview. It wasn't an interview. It was just him messaging me on Facebook and me replying to him.
What was your motivation behind engaging with these videos and these comments that were made about you?
I wanted to put a stop to it. I wanted people to stop talking about Brent. I don't care what they say about me, because I can defend myself, but Brent can't. It breaks my heart and it makes me mad that the stuff's going to be up there forever, because he shouldn't be remembered that way. He should be remembered as a Purple Heart soldier who fought for us, and it completely tarnished his legacy. And I thought if I make myself this open book that it would put an end to it, but it didn't. It just, all it did now was put me in the spotlight and make it worse, kind of. So I started defending Brent, and I would comment, I'm like, you guys don't know him. You're talking about him in a way that it's just not true. He didn't know Kohlberger. He didn't kill those people. Oh, you're the best friend. They started creeping into my life and going on my Facebook, and it just ran wild. And there was no way to like tame that fire at all. And people are showing pictures of my kids online and saying that that people should take away my kids and that I don't deserve to be a father. I'm not a murderer. I'm a family man.
Darren, a white man with a full beard, shakes his head slightly.
JLR didn't stop making videos about Brent after Darren spoke out, which makes me question his motivation.
It's a lovely view up here.
It shows how peaceful that town is, you know, on top of the world here.
I want to understand what motivates you to do the work that you do.
I think part of my life is I consider myself a redemption story. When I was in my early 20s, I got arrested by the federal government for fraud, wire fraud, and hacking into banks. And, you know, I stole people's money. I lost 10 years of my life incarcerated. You know, I got a long sentence to that, and I wasn't happy with my sentence. And when you do mistakes, you're all over the news. Your image is out there. Your mugshot's out there. There's articles out there. There's articles out there about me. And that's a chapter I want to put behind me.
Your strategy is forcing people to come forward with information to exonerate themselves. Do you understand? It feels like people are presumed guilty before innocent.
There's no such thing as innocent till proven guilty. So in my own situation, you know, I was guilty before innocent. I felt betrayed. I felt confused. I thought the presumption of innocence occurs in this country. It doesn't. It doesn't. It's you're guilty. You're guilty until you prove otherwise.
Standing with her hands on her waist and squinting in the bright sunlight, Zara nods. Several bridges span the wide waterway edging Moscow, Idaho.
This is a follow-up video so you all can calm the heck down. Stop coming after me and let my community grieve. And for the love of God, stop telling me it's not my community.
After being outed as a fake journalist, Destiny claimed that she knew two of the victims.
I used to work up there, and that's how I met Maddie and Kaylee. And every time I was there, I saw Kaylee and Maddie.
She has since admitted that she had never met Kaylee.
The point is,
is that I have ties to that community because my grandson lived right near the murder scene. I have a really close friend. Her daughter is a neighbor of theirs.
Hi, Destiny.
Hi, Zara.
How are you?
Destiny has started making tributes in honor of the victims.
The son and all.
In memory of Kaylee Gonzalez, I wrote, "We love you," so that whoever finds this will know that we all felt this loss and that we all love her deeply.
How do you connect with someone that you haven't met?
Even though I never met Ethan or Kaylee or Zanna, you don't have to know someone to be connected to them.
Yeah.
It's kind of like watching people on TV, right? You watch actors in a movie, you get to know them through interviews, you get to see how they react to questions. And with Kaylee and Zanna and Ethan, you get to see them through TikTok. Unfortunately, I've had people say I'm obsessed with them.
Destiny places a hand-painted stone alongside other tributes left outside the house, then films herself on her mobile phone.
Hello, guys. Hi, Shonda. I'm doing something special. Hey, Jenny. So I want to show you guys, thank you for those compliments. I wanted to share with you guys something really special. I guess one of the positive things about being considered part of the true crime community is that in this weird juxtaposition of TikTok and true crime, I have come to know and love a lot of different people on TikTok, which is another reason that it drives me to continue to do lives and to continue to make content, because not only am I helping them, but they're helping me. Again, thank you so much for the compliments. I love you all, and I'll see you a little bit later.
What kind of comments were you getting?
A lot of comments about my hair being beautiful my makeup and my outfit, which I couldn't really see the comments, though. Because of the brightness. But what I could see was very humbling and appreciated.
Zara and Destiny head up a sloped road, walking away from the boarded-up student house. Some of the town's buildings are lit up at dusk.
Before I came here, and before I visited Moscow, I was scrolling through my social media, watching so much content day after day about the case. And I think I've really seen the impact that content has had on the community. I'm not saying I judge the online sleuths, because I understand what it's like to feel validated on social media. But they are exploiting a situation for views, even though they may see it very differently. At the same time, without people like me watching the content, looking online, waiting for the next video to be uploaded, then the next theory and the next suspect, there wouldn't be a demand for it. You can't blame them for continually posting it as long as there's people like me watching it.
Courtroom footage of Koberger sitting down with his legal team. A statement reads, Brian Koberger faces four counts of first-degree murder. Pleas of not guilty have been entered to each of the charges. Then photographs of the four victims from left to right, Ethan Chapin, Zanika Nodal, Kaylee Gonzalez, and Madison Mogan.
She had everything going for her, but how did a 19-year-old girl just vanish? Gaia, a death on Dancing Ledge. Watch now on BBC iPlayer.